All right, we're back with another episode of Unguarded. This season, we're kicking off with Trevor Huffman, the OG himself. We going back down memory lane, of course, again, just talking about the transition, talking about entrepreneurship and how that can be one of the ways you go after playing. But first, Trevor, I want to just start it off with, you played 14 years. There goes the reggaeton in the radio in the background. This time is just the
The
reason.
life of an overseas
Yes,
athlete.
you can't even multitask or do anything for business because it's reckless. All right, we're back. We're back. 14 years you played, correct? Overseas.
Yes,
Well, in general, your whole career.
I played 13 years and then I coached in Belgium for 1 year in the top league in Belgium. So I say 14 overseas, 14 years over there was enough for me.
That's a pretty long time. You got a badge for that one,
I
making it
earned
that
my
long.
stripes, as they say.
Yes, you definitely did. Out of those 14, what was the highlight of the 14 for you? I guess let's start it off on the good note. What was the highlight for you of the 14 years abroad?
Man, that's a really good question. I feel like there's so many highs and lows, as you get overseas, especially going in, as like a 22-year-old out of Kent State. I was coming off the high of an Elite Eight, that feeling of invincibility was very quickly taken away from me as I got into the BBL, the German league, first division, as we lost our first eight games. And I just remember being like, I don't think I'm good enough to play over here. I don't know if I belong. You go from like, I'm the man in college basketball. In my head, I felt like I should have played in the NBA. That was my dream. And I was still trying to do that. Fast forward to the German league, I sucked. I couldn't pass for shit. Can I swear?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
All right. All right.
unguarded. It's
I
called
didn't know.
unguarded.
Then goddamn right. So it was, it was like that high coming from college and then realizing really quickly that I had a lot of work to do and a lot of development to do. And not only that, assimilating the culture, the people. And looking back, I think really the highlight of that first year was just making it to the end of the season. I was like getting on that plane home was definitely a highlight for me, getting back to the States, that feeling when you're an overseas athlete, you're just like, oh, I want to be home so bad. I'm going to get a Starbucks. I'm going to get a Mountain Dew or something, all the stuff you miss, all those little
Right.
things, a shelf not in the toilet. Like, why do they crap into shelf toilets? Like, what's that about?
Yeah, right. Everything
So,
is new.
yeah, it's just super weird, so that was probably a highlight. And then fast forward, I wasn't until the end of my career. I would say I won an MVP in Belgium, but that wasn't a highlight as much as winning a championship was. I think that's like the consummate goal. As you get older, you just want to win a chip or two or a cup championship or something. And I think your ego kind of diminishes as you get older in your career, and all you care about is winning. And I got to do that in France. In my last 3 years, we won a Pro B championship, moved up to A. We won a cup championship in Belgium and Portugal. So, I had like those highlights flavored in, which were just super fun because usually that means you're on a good team with good, just close teammates. All the teams I've ever won on always had like that family atmosphere on the team. And all the shittiest experiences have been where it's like, oh, the money is so great, but nobody really gives a shit about each other and we're just going to go do our job. So I always like struggled with that. Am I trying to make more money or am I trying to enjoy my life in Europe? And I realized as I got older, if you can find both, great. But the really beauty is just playing with people and teams of international cultures or different backgrounds and really having like that family atmosphere. That was always a highlight for me.
Yeah, no, it definitely is tough overseas because everyone's trying to make the money and get their stats to get the next check. But if you can find a good core of players that want to win and they put that above all the other things around the business, it's a great environment to be in. But it is very hard to find, and it's a unique thing when it does happen. Outside of basketball, you said the first year, which we all kind of go through, we're like, oh, they don't have this, they don't have this to eat. What is, my first year was in Israel, so you know the food was pretty good for me, but of course it was still a culture shock. But you say your first year, ready to go home, that was one of the highlights. So what made you continue to go back for
I mean, it's,
14 years, you know? So what was it that kept you going back?
I
That's the
didn't
question.
want to. I really didn't want to go back. I tried out for the Suns. I got through vets camp and I was a free agent for a little bit. After that first year in Germany, I was just so happy being back in the States and having all the, cold tubs and hot tubs and massages and actual athletic trainer that knows how to tape my goddamn ankles. And like all those protein bars and all the elite
Everything you can.
nutrition, everything, I'm hanging out with Penny Hardaway and Stephon Marbury, and I'm practicing against some of the best players in the NBA every day. And then, boom, I get cut. And it's like, oh, do I want to go back? Should I go back? Should I play? Back then we had the CBA. We didn't have the G League. So I went back to Poland, took a pretty shitty job, in Ostrów, which was like a really small city in Poland. And my agent was just like, yeah, there's not a whole lot available. So you want $6,000 a month or not? And I was like, I guess. So I went and took,
Right.
like
That's my
they're,
only option. Like,
yeah, like I guess, sure. And then, so I went there and it was like, again, a shitty experience for me. Like I was getting paid in a, appliance shop, like through bar, like they'd hand me a manila envelope through the bars in the back of a shop. I was expected to like win the, be the MVP of the league. They had all these high expectations of me, but they had no weight room. The gym was freezing cold. I had to practice in like a full on like snowsuit basically just to stay warm. There was no real continuity in terms of, you get there 6 months in, so you're kind of like on the outside of the team. Luckily, I had a guy named Lewis Lofton, old American. As younger players will find, like those older American vets are like your lifeblood to being sane.
Yeah.
And at that was like that was it. I came back from Poland. I gained 30 pounds. I was depressed. I didn't want to play basketball. I was ready to quit and just kind of give up on it. And then I played in the CBA for a season. And that kind of reinvigorated me. I lost a bunch of weight. I figured out like nutrition and how to take care of my body on my own, because college, you have everybody looking out for you, And like, so it's really about evolving as an athlete, evolving as not only internally, but understanding your body better and understanding how to take care of yourself. So once I trimmed back down, I leaned down. I mean, I was at like 225 in Poland. Like I was
Yeah,
just eating. I was
that's
drinking
crazy.
vodka, like just downing vodka and eating pierogies, and my
I
stats went from
mean,
like,
yeah. Would you say, I mean, it's usually, you know, you're going through it. You're like
yeah, I was
probably
in
trying
it.
to battle depression, but you're still actively playing a sport. But it's
Yeah.
just those situations where it's just mentally challenging. I think we all go through that at some point in our career where you're just in the space where the energy is not good. The team is not good. The management is terrible, unprofessional, and you're trying to get through this situation. And usually it leads to just bad habits kind of coming up, either drinking or, you know, going out or
Oh,
doing
yeah.
other things that aren't really helpful. So would you say during that time it was definitely a level of just depression that you were just trying to push through?
I wasn't even aware of what mental health meant back then. I was 24, 25. And I think, in 2000, what was that, 2005, 2006, like mental health wasn't really, wasn't a term we used or threw around a lot. It was more like, figure your shit out. Like, what's wrong with you, And
Right.
I think, like, looking back, it was a lot of just a lot of stressors, a lot of mental health is like, can you take care of yourself? Can you take care of your body? Can you take care of your mind in a stressful environment? And if you can't do that, then you're probably gonna, your mental health is gonna deteriorate. And I think that happens at every level, collegiately, professionally. And I think you have to really look internally at yourself. So I think that was the beginning. Like I hit rock bottom and that was good. looking back. Like, it was really good that I did that, you know. I think you learn a lot more from those types of really hard external environments where they stress you out and you suck. Like you're saying, the vibe is bad, the energy is bad. You don't know what you're doing. You're at an existential crossroads. And I think it's important that athletes, you know, in general, or anything, entrepreneurship, you come to these kind of intersections of like, what is meaningful and what keeps me healthy and sane and health, you know, happy. And I think that's,
Right.
you know, for me, what I figured out through that.
Yeah. No, the rock bottoms are good. I mean, again, there is
As
no
long as you get out
progress.
of
Yeah. There's no
them.
progress without the struggle. You know, it's
Yeah.
beauty in the struggle, as they say. And it is cliche, but it's kind of like at a point you're like, things are hard. But I guess as you get older, you're like, oh, things are hard, which means there's something I'm about to learn in this process that's gonna lead me to success further down. But when you're younger, you don't really kind of
Yeah.
noticed that. So what will can you remember the exact moment when you were like, it's a wrap, like it's time for me to get
In
up,
Poland.
it's a wrap? And like, yeah, what's the moment when you were like, you knew it was over? And like, kind of how did that feel? What was the conversation amongst yourself, like the two little
Yeah.
parts of you? How did that kind of come about?
But yeah, I for sure it was when I got paid a fake check and I tried to cash it, you know, on my way out of Poland, and it was like, nope, voided check, you know. So I just lost out on my last, you know, 2 months or month of salary, which I was just like, that was frustrating. And I was like, I'm done, I'm out, peace, you know. And then
Yeah.
I think, you know, like going back home, being back home, being back around basketball players, being in Flint, Michigan, you know, training with other players, you realize like, oh, there's this huge gray area of talent out there. You know, there's guys in the NBA that I can play against. There's guys overseas that, you know, are making less than me. And there's this like huge spectrum, you know, bell curve of where are you, you know? And it doesn't really matter how talented you are on that bell curve. It matters like which direction you're going in. And sooner or later, someone's going to value you for, you know, what you do for your team or for the organization. So, you know, being in the CBA kind of brought me back to that, like, wow, look at all these guys. I had five guys go on 10-day contracts, and we were you know, we won the Eastern Conference. I led the, you know, I was doing really well in terms of, you know, leading my team in assists and just facilitating wins. So then I kind of built that, I don't know, love of like, I really started to figure out that my best attribute as a player is helping other players, you know, putting them in the better position to do what they do best. And before that, my ego was like, I gotta score, I gotta
Yeah.
do this. This is what I did in college. Like, you know, and it was all about me, me, me. And the moment I kind of shifted my internal awareness to like, really the best thing I do is like make other players better around me.
Right. Yeah.
And then that changed how I approached the game. And it is funny how you attach things to, you know, a lot of players attach things to how they score. And how they, you know, how many points they get, how, you know, how they shot. And now all of a sudden, my attachment wasn't to that. It was just attachment to, did I help my teammates win the
Right.
game, play
Did I get
better?
the
And
shooter the ball when they needed it? Did I not feed my big man enough and they were out of rhythm? You know, it's like changing your perspective. I think so on that point, I mean, ego is a big topic, I think, in general with athletes, of why the system can do what it does to athletes also, because it's truthfully back on our ego. It feeds the ego where we're not thinking clearly. Do you think, like, how did you realize the ego was kind of getting in between you really transitioning into the best piece you could be for different teams, now that, you know, maybe there was another guy that was just flat out better scorer, someone else needed the ball in those situations? Like, how did you approach dealing with the ego and really being truthful with yourself during that transition of now becoming more facilitator and a leader in a different light?
Yeah, I think that I've always been kind of a introspective player, you know. Even in college, I was not recruited. I didn't have any Division One scholarships, and I always looked at like, well, what's wrong with me? You know, why can't all my friends are getting scholarships and I can't get any D1 looks. And, you know, there's a part of me that just said, screw it. Like I'm on my own path here and I'm going to figure it out. And I think as I got older, I realized that my path, you know, probably wasn't the NBA. First of all, my ego's attachment to like, you know, what wasn't happening really caused a lot of suffering. So, you know, being in the Euro League, playing in the NBA, getting paid $100,000 a year, like having, you know, I was attached to all these like things in my head that, you know, weren't helping me. They weren't serving me. They weren't making me a better player. I wasn't winning, you know, so who cares? So I think that CBA experience kind of taught me like, you know, stop being attached to things that, you know, aren't real, aren't, it's not truly what is happening in the moment. What's happening in the moment is you are on a team. You can help your team win. You can develop as a player. You know, you can try to get 15 assists a game, or you can try to shoot, you know, 5 for 20. Like, what do you want right. to be? You know, like it's great if you shoot great, but like if you help your team win and you're an unselfish player and you're, and I was kind of growing in my terms of understanding how offenses flow, getting mm-hmm. ball movement, you know, creating opportunities for, you know, for my shooters and players around me, like that is an infinite game.
Yeah.
You know, scoring is a finite game. You're only going to get so much shots. You're only going to get, you know, so many looks. And in right. fact, you know, it doesn't, it's a harder, you got to be really, you have to be really, really good at scoring. And I think as a point guard specifically, I felt like my attachment to how I viewed the game changed. And also I just didn't care. My ego, I wanted to win. And I also wanted to enjoy playing with my teammates. And I knew if I could make them happy, you know, it was going to be a fun experience. Like if they're getting the ball where they need it.
Right.
You know, and I played with like some Olympiacos players, some guys that were young in their career. And I felt like they were so talented and, you know, my job was to get them in good mm-hmm. spots and be unselfish and set them up.
Right. Definitely. So after the CBA experience, let's talk about when you officially transitioned and said, okay, this is it. What made you make that decision? And then how did you approach not having to go to practice or not having anything to do with basketball anymore? Like, how did that transition begin for you?
Not well. I think the hardest transition that any athlete will go through is the transition to retirement, you know, because I don't think any athlete, one, is, you might think you're ready for it mentally or physically, like, oh, my body's breaking down. I mean, at that point, you know, I was 35. I'd won a championship. I was in the south of France. I'm thinking, this is pretty nice. You know, like I'm living the life. I don't even care. Like if I'm in practice, I'm just having fun. You know, like at that point, it was just like a lifestyle. I'd been over there for so long. And I think as you, if you make it through those first few years and then you get to the last few years, it's the same type of suffering on both ends. Like, oh, I can't do this on the front end. But then on the back end, now you're used to the European lifestyle. You love the culture. You love the different, you know, you're like an exotic person over there. People talk to you like, why are you here? I'm like a short white guy. And people are like, oh, you're a pro basketball player. Like everybody wants to talk to you. And, you know, going out was fun. And, you know, you're, so now you're releasing that part of your ego, which you're attached to the identity as a professional athlete.
Right.
And I think going back home, you know, that first few months, you're like, oh, this is great. I'm seeing all my friends and I'm hanging out. And then like, you know, August, September comes and you're like blinking, like you can smell, you like miss the ball in your hand. You can smell pop. I don't know. You just like all those noises and you should be in the weight room, but you're just sitting at home watching Netflix. You know, you're like, you've binged on another season of, you know, Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, okay, now what? And I think, Now the suffering starts on, again. Your ego has been attached to your old identity as a basketball player and what that feels like. And, oh, I miss the culture of Europe. I actually miss the shitter now with the shelf underneath me and like the two buttons I can push that don't make any sense. Like there's like all these things that now you miss.
Right.
I miss my friends. I miss my teammates. There's no camaraderie. There's no energy output, you know, where I can use my body in a way that like I have all this pent up energy. What do I do with it? Do I fucking go work for a startup? Do I go corporate? I'm gonna have to start all over again. Like all my friends have jobs. Nobody will hire me in the coaching world. Like it's all, you know, all these like
it's
existential
loud, it's
questions.
very loud in the head.
Super loud. And I think it's even harder because you can't point your mind in a direction that doesn't exist, you know. And I think that's the whole thing. Where do you go? Where do you point you? Oh yeah, I want to point my mind in a positive direction. In what way? Now, you're either trapped by your sport in terms of like I have to go be a coach, or you're gonna start over in something you've never done before, you know, in terms of like, or maybe you have a hookup with like an insurance job from your teammate, or you know, like you have your network out there and you could, but again, you're gonna have to be starting over in terms of like I'm gonna work in a profession or industry I've never done and I probably don't really care all that much about.
Yeah,
So
definitely starting all over. Or are you, like you said, the most common is I just go be a coach because they're the only ones in your network truthfully saying you want to come coach. Like if there's a job out there, most 9 times out of 10 for us, you always have a coach that knew you in college and is like, hey, you want to come join my staff? Those are the job opportunities that I think all of us kind of get. So you obviously, the noise, you know, I can definitely relate. Obviously, I chose to build a sport tech startup, so I just kind of threw myself off the cliff there, like, all right, we're gonna go this route.
Smart. Just get right into it. Don't wait. Don't wait for that suffering to catch it.
Yeah, so but for you, let's talk about once you did say, okay, and you're listening to all the noises, what was the response? To
Man.
go down the path of figuring it all out.
Mental health breakdown was my path. Just like severe anxiety, panic attacks for like 4 to 6 months. I say those first four, like once it hit me that I wasn't playing anymore and I had like made up a logical decision, even though my soul, I think, still wanted to play basketball, you know, my identity was so attached to it. So I think that it was just like really that first 4 months. Thank God for my family and friends, the support systems, you know, that I had and I had kind of nourished throughout my, you know, playing days, coming home and going to see all my friends and people. And, you know, I have a pretty robust support network, which I'm really grateful for because I think, man, if I'd have been alone on that and I just burned all my bridges and I came home to just being isolated and I would have, I don't know what, you know, who knows what would have happened. I think I would have been shit, I probably wouldn't exist, you know, like I think that truly. So
Yeah.
I think that also taught me like what's the point of this human experience? You know, I really got to another existential place. Like, who am I helping every day? I'm not helping anybody, you know. And that's when I tried to do a startup in New York. I moved out there. It was supposed to be helping kids and after school programs. And I just did it for 7, 8 months and I just couldn't make New York City home. Didn't feel like home. I was on a, I'm from Northern Michigan, you know, small town. Like I'm pretty, you know, used to wide open spaces. So that was brutal. Nuts to butts with people on a commuter train every day. I just wasn't made for that. And so at that point I just said, hey, my buddy Paul and his wife April, I was like, you guys want to go sailing? Do you want to do an adventure? Like I want to get, you know, I want to get out. I want to try something new with my life. So at that point, we agreed to buy a sailboat and go sailing in the Caribbean off of Guatemala to Mexico for like 6 months. And I didn't know shit about sailing. But it was like my opportunity to just be self-reliant again, you know, and just who cares what the rest of society is doing? Like all my friends are working, they're, you know, everybody's making money and now at home and I'm at the bottom of this ladder. And I'm like, I'm not gonna partake in this hierarchy of status and, you know, capitalism. I just felt like, F it, I'm out. I'm gonna go live my best life and I'm gonna go try to figure out what's next for me. And so that's what I did. I just learned how to sail and we sailed 400 miles around the Caribbean. I didn't die.
Thankfully.
All my anxiety and depression vanished. You know, it was
Yeah.
just like I was part of nature. I was kind of tapped into this. I was tapped into a completely different experience, which was I wasn't getting like bombarded by what society wanted from me. I was just in it, you know. I was
Free,
watching
yeah.
this, yeah, it was completely free, and the cost of living was so cheap. It costs $800 a month to keep our sailboat at this marina. We were in Isla Mujeres, which is an island. There's people coming in. There's international people. So I had this beautiful experience. I'm playing sand volleyball. I lost, like, I was in better shape in Mexico, like, yeah, playing, living on a sailboat than I was as, like, a pro athlete. It was crazy. I was running 34 minutes, you know, 30 to 40 minutes a day playing volleyball, yeah, just doing yoga, super healthy lifestyle. And I was just like, I could probably do this for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. Like, and I was right, you know, just, I started writing a lot, journaling a lot. And that kind of self-discovery, I think looking internally, it just, you know, also kind of set me up for the next thing in life, which, you know, was Swish House. You know, I came back in, you know, June, and I met Jonathan Dews, who was, had a startup in Chicago, which was basically, we're trying to start getting basketball lovers in shape, getting mm-hmm. them fit through the game of basketball as a byproduct of skill training and sport performance. You know, you really do get in good shape, and it's a lot more fun than running on a treadmill or doing CrossFit or stuff you hate. So that's when we decided to go into that. That's when I was like, I'm going to focus on this too. I think this would be a fun project. And I really looked at my life as like a series of projects from that point on. And that one being a huge one. Mm-hmm. But the sailing trip really was the internal awakening, I guess you could say. Yeah.
Do you think, because I feel for myself, I've done many solo trips throughout my career abroad, you know, mm-hmm. went to Morocco by myself, similar, went to the desert, just myself in a tent, mm-hmm. a couple of nights, went surfing, you know, and again, that solo trip of just,
wait, where was that?
I was in Morocco. So you I went to Agafay.
Surf in Morocco?
So yeah, so Morocco, you have
the north side, right?
Yeah, on the coast, it's uh-huh. good waves. And then I took a car and went to the desert, Agafay Desert, spent some nights there. You know, and I think there was an element of, like, again, that self-discovery of doing solo trips. I know some players overseas are pretty scared and stuff, but I guess those solo trips are kind of that same, not the same as 6 months of sailing, but do you think you could have tapped into that self-discovery earlier throughout those 14 years? Or you think you just wasn't aware you needed that kind of rock bottom feeling to get you to push you into the whole trip of, like, I need to get away?
I think it's a really good question. I mean, if I could go back in time, I would love to have done more, you know, inverting my life. You know, one common practice of stoicism is, like, invert your life from whatever it is now and then completely invert it. So if you're a basketball player now, flip it. I'm not a basketball player. I'm not in Europe. I have no money. You know, like, when I was a basketball player, I was making really good money. I was making six figures for 10 years, you know? So I had money. I had this beautiful lifestyle. I would go home and I had, you know, I'd be with friends. I'd take people out to eat. I was, you know, I was like a minor scale. I was like trying to be, you know, be like an NBA player. In my head, I was like, this is awesome. You know, I wanted to get the fancy cars. I wanted to be it was just a status thing. And so, like, now I wish I could invert my life back then and say, okay, but who are you without basketball? Who are you without money? Who are you without status? Who are you without that title? And I think it's really hard because, you know, typically youth, you know, is you might be smart, but, you know, the difference between intelligence and wisdom is you're applying knowledge to make your life better and more meaningful, as opposed to, like, I'm smart, I have a ton of money, and I'm just, you know, I'm just living my best life, blowing money, right, doing drugs, drinking, whatever. You know, the difference is, like, what's truly meaningful. And I think that I wish I could go back in time and tell my younger self, like, hey man, it's a good practice to invert your life today, you know, or go on a solo trip by yourself and think about who you're going to be next without basketball or without money. If you had to start over at zero, what would you do? You know, and I think it's a really good exercise. But alas, I had to suffer I mean, I went to the Caribbean, but that was, like, a really hard choice for me, because mm-hmm. I had to release my you know, I had to release my attachment to what I thought society wanted from me, what I thought my friends and peers and parents and business friend, you know, like I had to release all that, which was like inverting, you know, inverting my life in a way, because now all of a sudden I was free. I was free to be who, free to be whoever I wanted. And I think that's when you can really make some meaningful progress, you know, whether it's in work or hobbies or, you know, rediscovering yourself. I mean, it's a tough one because like a lot of athletes that, you know, are, they're in that egotistical state, which also makes them really good at their sport. Like, I'm not going to let somebody beat me. I'm going to work harder than you. I'm going to do this because, you know, this is what I got to do to win. But when that ego, you know, when that, when basketball ends, you know, it's kind of like, well, what, that ego is not serving me now. I have to go explore. Yeah. I have to go change and evolve. And I think it's like a complete opposite end of the spectrum.
Yeah. No, I think that's a wonderfully put.
Well, thank you.
I also think like losing that ego is also a part of like, it's hard. I mean, I haven't, I've never noticed. The more it's like detaching from the game and like discovering like I'm Jory. Yes, I play basketball, but I'm so much more. It kind of hurts. I've noticed that it's like I gotta like get some energy up to be like, okay, let me pull that little monster out and be like, no, you're not about to get me, because you start to be like, what do I have to prove to you? Like I'm playing the game, you know? Yeah. But that ego was needed, I think, to really be your best, which is kind of unhealthy, borderline unhealthy. I guess it's finding other ways to be motivated, to be your best. But I think that is a great example of just completely shifting everything from where you are now and doing a 360. Definitely a good concept for some athlete retreats. We got to make that happen. Like, hey, come. Let's, you know, do this retreat. We're going to do a 360. Whoever's down to come discover who they are, let's do it. And I think
I would have signed up that. I would have signed up for that retreat when I got done playing ASAP, or, you know, like even when I was in it, you know, as I was as you transition towards the end of your career, you know, I think a lot of athletes are just oblivious to that, how, you know, what that transition means. And I think like, if I always hear people say like the business of helping athletes transition, better is, you know, is a business that hasn't been, I don't know who's out there doing it other than like sports psychologists and people, you know, in the therapy realm. But, you know, I've had therapists talk to me about, hey, will you help a pro, you know, athlete kind of transition? And I'm like, oh yeah, I can help.
Yeah.
Cause you know, and it's a continuing education, you know, and it's not, I think that's part of it, is like letting go, like you said, letting go of that ego attachment to this is why I'm good at basketball. This is why I'm good at my sport. Me. To now, like, you know, what am I doing? I'm floating in the universe, like somebody, you know, kicked me off my space shuttle, and I'm just like looking around, like, this is a big universe. This is a big world. We can choose anything we want. Mm-hmm. Why am I, you know, why would I go back into something that I'm not really curious about, passionate about, you know, who am I helping, you know, like all those questions. Like if it's always about you, then you're going to be missing out on the other side of that. Like, well, then it's not really going to be meaningful because you're not helping anyone else. Right. You know, it's kind of like a selfish cause. If it's at the end of the day, you're only worried about helping yourself. You're going to miss out on, okay, well, I can't bring value to the world in meaningful ways because it's always about me. And I think that's like the closed mindset, fixed mindset for basketball players. You know, they, not all of them. I mean, I'm sure there's enlightened basketball players out there, but I think having a retreat or, you know, going places and really talking about what it is you're struggling with. And it doesn't matter what it is. It could be culture. It could be, what's my next move? It could be, how do I make money? How do I save money? Mm-hmm. You know, all those questions. I think athletes, you know, there's so much stress because we have a finite career, you know, 35. Okay. $1 million isn't a ton of money, even in the athletic world, to survive on until you're 75. So no matter what, if you're not investing well and you're not thinking about how to create meaningful value in the next stage of your life, you're going to get lost and it's going to suck. And that's what
Right.
happened to me. And that's why I went sailing and rolled around in the sand.
Yeah. I think to your point about the transition, there are a lot of people now helping athletes transition. A lot of people helping athletes transition for the wrong reasons, misconceptions of, you know, the money they can potentially make for helping athletes transition. But I, you know, Julie and I both, we just truly believe the transition is something that's more community based. I think there's a big opportunity for these trips, for more holistic community things around, look, I'm lost. Like, there is no, oh, let's help you with your resume. No, that's not, I don't think that's a band-aid and like push you somewhere, because you're still gonna ultimately hit that moment that you're gonna have to do the work. That's what I think is a big opportunity of how do we get to doing the work. I don't know if pushing a player to a corporate job is the answer. I think that leads to maybe more depression, because some of those jobs that are being posted on these boards are not.
Yeah.
It doesn't fit, in my opinion, many athletes of where they could thrive and what they could be into and actually be enjoying it. So I think there's a lot of opportunity, a lot of people coming in the athlete transition space, but I still don't see a lot of programs or things that really get it. And most times it's not being led by former players that have gone through it. So also you're missing a whole group of people that actually went through it and they know how it feels. So you went on the sailing trip, did some self-discovery, and then you came back. And was entrepreneurship ever really on your mind? I know you were always working with kids and doing camps, et cetera. But did you ever really think entrepreneurship and starting your own business was going to be a thing? Was it just kind of a natural transition once you came back to the States and started to think about what was next?
Yeah, I think it was, entrepreneurship was kind of like, I always had this investing philosophy when I was playing that, even though I probably spent too lavishly, I always knew that like a good asset that's producing income, real estate, rentals, stocks, bond, you know, anything like that was where I wanted to put a majority of my money as a player. And so I started, you know, I got up to 13 rental houses that I paid for in cash in Michigan. So I felt really like I didn't know what I was doing. You know, when I first started, I had to form an LLC. Like, what is that? You know, like, I don't even know what's an article of, you know, of incorporation, of organization. I didn't understand any of it, and it was overwhelming. But I think it's kind of like basketball. You know, when you really want to learn basketball, you have to invest in yourself, and you have to really either spend money or time finding the people that are actually successful at what you want to be good at, whether it's basketball or real estate or business or entrepreneurship. So I was lucky in that sense to kind of be able to apply my, get kind of almost like a mentoring group around me. And my dad was a businessman, a lawyer. A bunch of my friends who had just not played professionally were, you know, in the financial, you know, advising areas, and they would just, no, just try to pick their brain and surround myself around smarter, more talented people than me, just like a point guard should do everywhere.
Yeah. You
know? And I think that type of early access to real estate and investing in passive income really taught me a lot, because what's passive? There's no, you know, like, even if I had to fix toilets, I had calls about my boiler, I had this, I had that. You know, once you get up to 10 rentals, you're getting, you know, I'm in Europe trying to like find a plumber, find an electrician, find this. I was like the hub of communication. And then they, you know, they would deposit rent through, you know, into my LLC account. So I was like, I learned a lot from doing that. And I realized, like, is that really a business I want to be in? Because it's brutal. You know, I don't want to evict people. I don't like fixing something up and then having somebody ruin it that, you know, a year later, you're like, holy shit, I just painted this house, I just finished this floor, I had this.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was kind of like contracting out a lot of the work, but it also taught me, you know, what do you know, goes back to the sailing trip. Like, there's millions of ways to apply yourself, and what really is, what brings you joy, or what brings you meaning, or what are you curious about that you kind of, you know, what industry or something, what interests you? Could be anything. So I think I've, you know, I like basketball. I think when I was done, I was burnt out with basketball. You know, I didn't want to be around it. I didn't want to coach. I, you know, that's what I realized in New York City. And then when I got off the sailboat, I was like, you know, it would be nice to help someone with my, you know, my knowledge of basketball. Like, someone out there is probably like, it would be cool if I could get in shape or become a better athlete, or a kid that could, you know, once is on a similar path to me when I was a kid, you know, dreaming about college. So that's where I just, you know, hooked up with Swish House co-founders Jonathan Dews and Dave Holtzmuller. I was actually at a basketball tournament. I wasn't supposed to play him, but I had gotten off the sailboat and I was there watching my younger brother, who still plays 3x3 FIBA. Shout out to Princeton 3x3,
Nice.
and he won a gold medal at the World Cup in 2019. So he's still like active and playing. And so I'm still watching tape and like asking him, like, why'd you guys not switch that, you know, drop screen? Like you guys had a chance, you know, like I still argue with him about, like, what are you guys trying to accomplish with your offense here? You know, there's no ball movement or flow. And like, anyway, so I just have always gravitated towards basketball, kind of watching the game and like, but more on a development side. And so I just was like, that's probably a good, you know, sign that I'm curious about. How can I develop players or anybody from youth to adult? So that's how Swish House really started. It was this concept of like, one, there's millions of basketball lovers out there that can, they're either playing competitively or like going by themselves to shoot at a park. Like, you know, the opposite ends of the spectrum. If you love basketball but you can't play competitively, what are you doing? Well, you're probably just going to shoot by yourself, or like, I don't know, like work on your game, because you can't, you'll get hurt if you play anyway. So like, Swish House is like right down the middle of that. We're like a team-based fitness class where you have two teams, 2 to 4 teams kind of running and shooting against each other, but there's actually no live play. There's no 5-on-5, there's no 1-on-1 as of right now. And it's really just about getting a great sweat. It's training for the game of basketball. So it kind of serves the competitive basketball players, because they're getting reps, they're getting curls, fades, flares, you know, they're getting reps off the dribble, they're shooting under pressure, stuff like that. And then it, for the, you know, player that can't play competitively, they're getting their like team fix, where they're not shooting by themselves, somebody's rebounding for them, they're shooting against themselves or trying to make more, you know, make more shots. Or, and we kind of designed it with an NBA sports performance doctor, Trent Salo, who works with the Pistons. And he's like a physical therapist, dual PhD genius. Like, if you have a back, any issues, like, that's what I'm calling. I'm like, yo, my back hurts. And he's like, here's your protocol. You must do this.
We need to get him for the second opinion though. We
Oh, my
go.
God.
We need a second opinion doc to see if he's down
Yeah.
to
He's
connect.
awesome. He's. So he's and so he kind of divided, like, I was like, you know what, if we're right down the middle, we're not competitive playing and we're not like alone shooting at a hoop, like, how can we actually make people healthier? You know, how can we make people happier through like the game and healthier, like more functional? So he kind of created our sport performance lab, our injury prevention protocols, you know, just stuff to help people lower back, their knees, their Achilles, all that stuff. Like, as you get older as an athlete, you're like, oh shit, it's
Right, it
really
just comes out
important.
of nowhere, like
Yeah, you're
what?
like, I didn't realize. Like, so you're constantly in this like prehab phase as you get older. And, you know, even younger athletes should be in that prehab phase, where they're always, you know, already doing like the protocols for healthy back, knees, ankles, you know, where typically most of your injuries, career ending injuries, are happening, you know, in those three areas, kind of
Right.
knees, back, and ankles or Achilles. But yeah, so that's kind of it. And Swish House started in Chicago. I moved there for 3 years. Didn't really like the city as much, but really the community of Swish House kept me just motivated and hungry to build the, you know, my entrepreneurship. It was a startup. It was a new thing. I was constantly learning new more about business and marketing and sales and ad copy and follow up, some professionalism in terms of like how do you build a community? So, you know, I think we got up to 500 members in Chicago, and our revenue was doing really well. You know, if that had been my franchise at Swish House, I would have been making more money as a Swish House franchise owner than I ever had in Europe. So it like clicked. I'm like, oh my God, like I can empower and help teach, coach, train not only professional former athletes that are coming back from Europe, hopefully one day, but also this huge community of basketball lovers that are, you know, kind of on that spectrum of either competitive or I want to shoot, you know, shoot at a rim by myself. So yeah, that's pretty much, it's a really took us 3 years to kind of iterate on how the class works, because it's not like yoga where everybody comes in is doing the same position, or it's not like CrossFit where you're like power clean, row, skier, plyo jump five times, 30 minutes. You know, it's like I have an eighth grade level player and I have a college former college player. You know, they're way different skill levels, but how can I make this class fun for both of them and challenging enough for both of them? So that's what the iteration was like. And that's what we do in our training manual and our coaching certification is like, it's like yoga for basketball player, you know, it's like a basketball certification, much like yoga. You just have to get so many reps of how to adapt the class on the fly, you know, what fun drills work, you know, low intensity versus high intensity, you know, type shooting drills and dribbling drills and passing drills and conditioning drills, you know, all the things you hated about like preseason, we kind of sneak into like a 5 minute window. You're like, I always like, I can't believe people are paying me for this.
Exactly. Like,
But like,
oh
you need
man.
it. We all need that. Like, I don't want to run a 16, but
But you
actually,
need to do it.
it's a great way to stay in shape sometimes,
I mean,
especially
it's
when you,
like the Sean T Insanity workouts. It's like train like a pro. You know, people are interested in training how we train. It's kind of like, do you really want to go through that? Because college workouts and some of those workouts are like, how did I get through it? But it's a great concept, and it gives, you know, I know another gym in New York that I went to. It was basically that same concept, a former D1 athlete, basically doing training workouts, cardio, etc., as if you are an elite athlete. And you know, people go crazy for it. They
I mean,
love that they get to die. I mean, and it's better. You get with a group of people and you guys got to kind of going after it together the same way you did with your team. So it's definitely much better than going to the gym and just trying to figure out, okay, what routine I'm gonna do today, hop on the treadmill. So
It's nothing worse than me trying to figure out my daily workout routine. And I
I
think
hate
that's the
it.
whole point of it. That's the value a fitness company brings or a fitness community can bring. And I think for a lot of basketball athletes, transitioning into the fitness industry is really fun because it's more of like an altruistic thing. I mean, you think about heart health, diabetes. I don't know how many people you've lost. Like in my inner circle, teammates, I've already lost a few to heart health. You know, college teammates, and it's in a, and it just like it's frustrating, and it's also like motivating because it's like, man, the sooner you know we can get going on this and really get these in the pockets of the United States, maybe that's a way to keep people attached to the game just enough to keep their heart healthy. I mean, who cares about losing weight? Is your you know are you going to survive the next 5 years? Like what
Definitely.
track are you on? You know. And I think that motivates me too, you know, in terms of just seeing, you know, my teammate John Wharton passed away this year. Brandon Hunter played at Ohio University, played in the NBA. He just passed away in hot yoga class. Like heart health, physical health, fitness, you know, all that stuff is super important, you know, and I think it's also meaningful work because as a former athlete, people look up to you. And they look up to you as a coach, and they look up to you as like what you're, you know, what you could do with your body. That's a skill, you know, what you've done, what I've done, what any pro athlete's done. The ability to like push, be consistent, show up for yourself and your team, like over that 14 years or however long you've been doing it, you know, from
12
college 12.
sneaking up
I
on
mean, it's
you.
like you understand the how consistent it you have to be. And I don't think that the recreational athlete one can like they don't always understand how consistent and one, and then B, like, you know, how to modulate workouts and how to listen to your body and how to, you know, just keep improving every month, every quarter, every year, and then keep stacking those days on top of each other, those months on top of each other. And that's how you become healthy. It's not a one-time thing. It's not a piece of broccoli that I can eat today. It's a, you know, consistent. Are you going to, it's about consistency and all the domains.
Definitely. It definitely seems that, I mean, first of all, I love the Swish House. I love the concept. Again, you know, we've come across it a few times, Julie and I. Far as now being a full-blown entrepreneur, you have a family, you know, you are now fully removed from the time as a player. How do you feel regarding the community of basketball players now, like being a retired athlete? Do you feel you would want to give more? Do you feel you still would love to just have a better camaraderie amongst other retired athletes that might be in the area? Do you still long for that community, or is this something that you think over time it kind of goes away, that longing to still want to be involved? Or is it just something you get used to because there really isn't a space for you to cultivate those relationships and maintain those relationships?
Yeah, I think you just hit the nail on the head with that last statement. I mean, I feel like I've given up on finding that community, that, you know, that brotherhood or even sisterhood of like, oh, you played college hoops or pro hoops at that, you know, like there's just something about, you know, it's like birds of a feather flock together. And I think basketball players, you know, that especially have played at elite levels, they understand, I don't know, there's just like a something fun about being, you know, around that type of energy. Basketball energy is unique.
Right.
It's expressive. It's robust. It, you know, it's fun. You know, there's typically a playful, and you know, you can trash talk, you can be sarcastic, you can be quiet. You know, there's like, and so I do miss that community. And I think that was part of what I wanted with Swish House, but you still are missing like that top 1% of people that are like just have gone through the same stuff as you. And I probably can't, you know, say this, I mean, it's not fair to the military service people out there, but it's much like that, where you feel that camaraderie of like, we went to war on the court together, you know, we battled for each other, we got through injuries, you know, like I think about all my teammates that, you know, have been spread out now across the United States and the world. And it's just like, if there was a way to tap into, you know, that in Raleigh, where I just moved, I've only lived here for 4 months and I literally have one friend, you know, it's like, it's, I don't know why it's so hard to make friends at 44. Like,
right.
It's probably the hardest thing in the world. I play pickleball now. I like talk to 65-year-olds every day about pickleball, like, oh, nice drop shot. But I would really like to be talking about, you know, the NBA versus FIBA, you know, and how the FIBA style game is completely more fun to watch, or there's, you know, it's way more, you know, it's in, the rest of the world is catching up with the NBA just because of, you know, player development in the US. Like, those are the conversations I would love to be having, but I can't, because I don't have, like you're saying, I don't, how do I tap in? Where do I tap in? Who, you know, maybe I should just start showing up at the park, but I don't even play anymore.
Yeah. Like, yeah. You know, is that disconnect as well? You? Is that disconnect where now the certain generations, they need to go down memory lane to know, like, oh yeah, you know, he really did hoop. Oh, he was actually good. I think is that element as well, where, you know, like with Weevolve, it's like, okay, maintain that profile within Weevolve. Yeah. So when someone does find you, they can see, oh, entrepreneur, he did XYZ, but then they can say, oh, but yes, he was legit. Like, I can check his other part of his resume quickly, because I know that's sometimes, you know, you have a lot of people say, yeah, I played And then you kind of think like, did you really? Because they'll say it and be like, this dude, this she didn't play. Like, it's different.
Yeah.
It's different. There's levels to it, as they say. There's
No,
levels to it.
exactly.
But no, I think the what we've learned through the process with Weave Evolve is that, and research, of course, there are a number of people trying to start athlete communities, micro communities, just because they miss that camaraderie, the institutions, of course, our colleges didn't do a very good job, unless you want a championship. Like, Duke has good culture. All of their
Yeah.
like former players come back. They have a different type of vibe. Some colleges have done a good job, but not all of them. So I think it
Yeah.
is something that we consistently hear that people want it, players want it. They want to find ways to even now if who are all the entrepreneurs in that space. So I think it is something that is unique and it's a big opportunity, and it's good to see different people in the space trying to make it happen, and hopefully it gives fruitful returns. Before we head out, one of the questions, just wanted to ask, I know we touched upon it, but for the players like myself, me and Julie, as we are actively transitioning. We're in that limbo stage, but I know a lot of other players that are going through it. Some players that we know have just finished and they're going through it.
Yeah.
We talk about it. They've asked, we need a weight sessions, talk about that community. Weight sessions is that space where we would have digital community meetups and just talk. I mean, we would share our screen and show some funny stuff that was happening just to be, and not talk about basketball, but just talk about what's going on. What would be kind of your advice to those athletes that are kind of in that gray space of still playing, but they know the time is coming? What would be kind of your advice to them?
Yeah, definitely start with, enjoy it, enjoy every day as you kind of are getting to the end, of the tunnel in terms of your career. I think I thought I did a pretty good job of that, just being grateful for being on the court on my last, last, at least the winning season I had when we won the championship. I was thinking like, I don't know, after that season, I don't know how much longer I really need to play because I finally achieved that, finally big goal of winning a chip and national title was all I ever wanted, and I think that I had waited so long and it was like a big, big thing because there was only 2 to 3 Americans per team and I felt like a key part in that cog, but I really felt so grateful every day I was at the gym and I was just trying to be present and know like, man, this is it. Like this is kind of coming down to an end. And I think so that would probably be my first piece of advice is just be present and enjoy your, your every day, even if it's hard or even if you're hurt or even if, you're getting through, a bad season. I wish I could, I wish I could go back and tell myself right before I retired, like, hey, even if a coach is trying to ruin it for you or, you're losing and things aren't going well, you got hurt again, like, you still have today to make, you can still have fun today and enjoy it as much as you can, regardless of the circumstances around you. It's the stimuli of basketball can create a negative response, but you're always the last person that gets to choose your response in any
Right.
environment stimuli. So I think like if I could go back, I would say, hey, remember that, because this is going to be a shitty, usually on the last month or two before it's really over, it's going to be this bad stimuli. It's going to be a bad, negative, toxic environment. And so how do you kind of find those sweet spots and special moments, whether it's helping a younger player develop or getting shots up at the end of practice, or there's a lot of players that are looking up, haven't been in the game as long as you, and kind of what wisdom you can pass on to those younger players, and so that would be one. And I think just going into that transition with a gentle heart, I think that ego is going to be really hard on players because they're so used to winning and they're so used to competing and they're so used to being the best and then. When you have to start over, I think that really that ego to drive and push and be the best is going to limit you in terms of what you're able to explore about your life and about yourself. And I think that goes back to our earlier conversation about looking kind of internally and being gentle with yourself and saying, like, yeah, it's okay. Like, if I want to go explore and go live on a sailboat, or I have money saved up and I want to take a 6 month hiatus to hike the Appalachian Trail or go do a solo trip, or start journaling every day to figure out, like, what am I curious about? I think that's really important, because a lot of guys will feel under duress. A lot of players will feel under that, like, stress of not knowing, and that attachment to society, like, bombarding them with, like, what are you going to do? Like, it's kind of like when you went to high school, like, where are you going to go? Where are you going to go to school? Who are you going to sign with?
Right.
It's the same now. Like, society's bullshit continues, because now everybody's going to be like, what are you going to do? How are you going to make money? What's the, you know, like,
right. Do you have an NIL deal? You know, are you going pro? Do you have a sponsorship deal with Nike or Adidas? Who you choosing? Like, what?
Yeah. I never had to worry about that. Thanks, George.
Yeah.
Me I was either. Never that. I wasn't even good enough to have any of that. So that was like, no worries for me there. All I had to do was get better. But like, yeah, I think that would be the two things, you know. I really looked at, like, the mental health diminishing of, you know, in my transition was like, it forced me kind of make a choice to, like, let go of everything and focus on myself in a different way. And I think that was good. But I think a lot of guys are probably just, a lot of athletes are just tougher than me. Like, I'm just sensitive anyway. So, you know, I was like, man, I'm going to go do some ayahuasca.
Yeah.
And really, you know, and fuck this. Like, what is happening to me? You know, like,
yeah.
I'm really for a fucking hero's dose of psilocybin right now. And I want to understand who I am. And that was what I did. You know, I'm not saying that's for everybody, but I, you know, I went down that, like, spiritual path towards development. And using, you know, substances like psilocybin or, you know, other stuff to, like, open up my mind to all the possibilities that, in the end, we're all so powerful. You know, we have this energy that we can put into the world, and kind of what direction do I want to point that? And I think that was, you know, what I would tell my younger self, like, it's okay, dude. Like, it's okay to be completely lost and go on this journey. And, like, figure out what's really important to you, and you know, where that love exists. You know, just like when we were kids, love was basketball. It was just like, we loved the game so much. And then as we got older, you know, all the layers of the onion got attached to it. And, you know, in the end, we're like, why are we even doing this?
Right.
You know,
like, I used to love this. What happened?
Exactly. Can you find that, like, peel all the onions back again and find that next thing? I think it's that would be how I would approach that transition. And it's definitely, I think that's why we need community. Like you're saying, we need old wise players that can help mentor younger players transition. We need that community of, like, where can I find a good place to just hang out and chat and talk and dialogue? You know, can I dialogue about my life? Can I have this moment to express my frustrations? And, you know, maybe somebody will have good insight, just like an old coach would or an old teammate would. So it's really cool what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone's saying they want it. So that's the first thing. Now, again, you know, in business, people say they want stuff all the time, but will they pay for it? That's another thing. But all in all, I know, you know, I want it. You know, I want to be able to go on retreats with a number of athletes and be able to sit and work through our stuff together collectively. I know there's a place for individual psychologists and having someone that particularly especially works for you, but I do think there's power in community, and I think it's something that athletes, we could naturally gravitate towards because we've gotten through things together our whole careers. Now maybe not for tennis players or individual sport athletes, but for team sports, I think many times you've gone through something, you've gone through your worst moments in front of those people, and then maybe they picked you up and saw you at your best moments. That's kind of therapeutic in a sense. And I think, how do you bring that to other areas, not just on the court or when you're with one particular team, but how can we continue to cultivate this type of community and environment away from the game? But you know, we'll see. But it's good to see so many former athletes doing great things, starting their own businesses and bringing a new light to the game, whether that be at the elite level or for just recreational. I think it's still a beautiful thing that we see happening for the game, and basketball is just so unique. I say basketball kind of controls the culture of sport. You see people wearing Jordans, you don't see them wearing messy soccer cleats and stuff, you know. So, you know, it's like, you know, maybe Coco now with the New Balance deal, you'll see people wearing Coco New Balance shoes around. But all in all, you usually see people wearing basketball stuff. It's kind of like a cultural leader in sport. So it's just exciting. But I do thank you, Trevor, for you know, connecting with us, joining the podcast. Look forward to seeing you in the Weebolf community. So if some players hit his podcast and then they'll come and, hey, what about that Asawaga? You know, how about that sailing trip? Like, can we go on a sailing trip with you?
Yeah, I'll send you guys my boat's address. It's still there,
So
waiting for
yeah.
basketball players to do some ayahuasca on.
Yeah, we got to do a special trip. Get some players, about 10 or however many we can hold, and do a trip. But that's definitely in the pipeline. So
Well, I
look
look forward
forward
to
to it.
helping in any way I can. Thanks, George.
No, thank you. And just quickly, obviously, just quickly tell us where everyone can find more about you, your business, etc.
Yeah, so I'm currently in Raleigh. So if anybody's in the Raleigh area, please say hello. T Huffman 24 is my Instagram. That's pretty much the only thing I use, or T Huffman 24 at Gmail if you want to email me anything. But yeah, Swish House Fit is our Swish House community, which is in Brooklyn, Chicago, and then I'm trying to open one down here in Raleigh. So for the Triangle area. You know, getting that going. So that's kind of my next project down here. So yeah, so T Huffman 24 at Instagram. You can chat it up.
All right. Well, thank you again. Enjoy the rest of your day, and we'll be in
Thank
touch.
you.
All right.
See you, Joy.